is so much that we need to share. So send a smile and show you care. Give a little bit.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. It is September 3rd, 2008, Wednesday. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Cashflow. I just want to let everybody know in advance, tomorrow we should have scheduled Marty Kaiser as well coming back for round two to talk about some more of his book. We really barely got into anything in the short time that he initially came on, so he's going to be coming on tomorrow. Also, just a warning in advance, if we do have any technical difficulties, please forgive us. I can only tell you that... appropriate as it may seem, that I have had and heard of more technical problems with computers and communications than I ever have in the last week, all over the place. And it's a welcome to a brand new world of total electromagnetic, total chaos. So without further ado, I think this is the perfect segue. Bob Neverett. Bob Neverett, are you there?
Yes, good afternoon, James.
Good afternoon.
Good to be back.
Well, I wanted to, you heard what I basically just said. I think right now, because as I'm witnessing more and more people with communication problems, electrical problems, with the computers, it makes me wonder where we're headed.
We ain't heading anywhere.
Exactly.
We're just running on the spot forever. So the...
Right.
Do you have a particular story other that you want to go into, or just this? Because I have something I have a theme today.
Yes, please go ahead with that theme.
Yeah, I want to take on our competitors. And you know who our competitor is? Yours and mine, to the degree we think we need to have a press conference and get global news attention, right?
Right.
That's our agenda, supposedly,
yes.
Right?
Yes, yes.
Who would you say would be our competitor? I would say it's Jon Stewart's The Daily Show.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because that is the world's major news source. I'm looking at an article in the New York Times. The writer Michiko Kakutani did an article on August 17th, and it says, "Is Jon Stewart the most trusted man in America?" And someone sent me this, and I read through it. I said, my God, this is chock full of stuff to prove what I've been saying for the last, well, since July 2nd on this network.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go through some of these statements and show, this show is going to hurt, this, what we're talking about today, what I'm going to discuss is going to hurt a lot of people, going to bug a lot of people, because Jon Stewart is the Walter Cronkite of our era. And people, at least in their TV body, identify and need a person like Jon Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
But everything is upside down compared to the Walter Cronkite era, all right? So the most trusted guy is a cynical cyborg, a joking, mocking, adolescent whippersnapper, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now here, are you there, James?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, okay.
Okay.
All right. I want to begin with some quotes at the end of the article. And he says, Mr. Stewart regards, quoting the article, regards comedy as a kind of catharsis machine, a therapeutic filter for grappling with upsetting issues. He says, what's nice to us about the restlessness of the show is you know you're going to get that release no matter what. No matter what, every night, Monday through Thursday, like a pizza. It may not be the best pizza you've ever had, but it's still pizza, man, and you get to have it every night. It's a wonderful feeling to have this toxin in your body in the morning, that little cup of sadness, and feel by 7 or 7:30 that night you've released it in sweat equity and can move on to the next day. Now, what he means is that when he reads the news in the morning...
Mm-hmm.
It's his morning cup of sadness. All right?
All right.
Go ahead.
All right, I hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Now, I think I've explained that the basic ecology in news processing is that we need a lot of bad news to deal with the good news. Do you recall me talking about that?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, and that advertising is, on the surface, all the good news, new wonderful products, new reinforcement of products. They say that people who really enjoy ads are the ones who have the products the ads are about. So they find out what they think about the product they just bought by reading the ad for the product, right?
Exactly.
So the good news is the ads, but because advertising upsets us and demands us to change and we can't keep up, it actually becomes an irritation. So its effect is bad news. So then you need a lot of good news, in quotes good news, to balance off the irritation that all the ads give you.
Right, so, exactly.
So then you start looking at tragedies and, you know, Hurricane Gustav and these things that pop up as giving you a feeling of surviving the apparent bad news. So the good effect is that you feel good from the bad news because you survived it.
Right.
So everything's backwards.
Uh-huh.
So he discusses, he says they begin in the morning. They talk about the day begins with a morning meeting where material harvested from 15 TiVos and even more newspapers, magazines, and websites is reviewed. That meeting, Mr. Stewart said, quote, would be very unpleasant for most people to watch. It's really a gathering of curmudgeons expressing frustration and upset. And the rest of the day is spent trying to mask or repress that upset through whatever creative devices we can find. So they look for stories that make us angry in a whole new way. So you get a bunch of people coming in the morning who've been processing the regular news, which would be bad news, but it makes them feel good. But these guys instinctively feel angry from all the bad news when they show up at work.
And then what a life.
Yeah. So they're paid to be angry and PO'd. And they vent their frustrations from processing the daily news in the morning at the meeting all day long. They're processing. Mm-hmm. And they then try to make it palatable or acceptable to Americans by making it funny.
There you go. Right, exactly.
Now, we criticize the Chinese for, you know, presenting the Olympics in a propagandistic context. This is the most Orwellian operation. We're going to take the bad news, which is actually making people feel good, but these guys are paid not to feel good from the bad news, so they take their irritation from the bad news and turn it into what is, quote, good news, or entertaining stuff that'll go down easy.
Right.
Now, now
it's
the
like taking
underlying
aspirin for your pain. Aspirin for your pain.
Right. Now, the underlying bias of American and maybe North American culture and maybe Western culture, but let's just focus on the United States, is that the thing that people really value, Americans value in someone else, is a sense of humor. In the end, they'll tolerate anything in another person if they have a sense of humor. So the feeling of camaraderie or whatever that you get from a sense of humor is the basic characteristic feature of the American mentality. The Chinese, other cultures, they don't value a sense of humor like we do.
Right.
They have a sense of humor, but they might appear more grim, like the Russians, or more serious, and don't joke the way we do.
Right.
So here it is. The job of John Stewart is to keep the American archetype of laughing continuing, to keep that continuous. Now, if we're in a post-information society that I've said since 2000, then it's you're not the advertising role of giving you good news, which turns into a bad news effect, and the complementary role of bad news to make you have the good news effect. If it's a post-information society, then that ain't going to work because nobody's listening. Nobody can take it in, and nobody can respond. So the article begins by saying that there's a recent promotional spot for the Daily News' TV show where they brag that they bring you all the all the news stories first before it's even true.
All the news. Great.
That's what they're bragging. But that is supposed to evoke laughter, but it actually describes the physics of the situation. Because people need news content in their TV body, it doesn't matter whether it's true.
Right.
Okay?
Exactly.
They just want news stories. Anything.
Right.
Anything. But, of course, they criticize President Bush for putting out stories that are false and lying. But these guys are actually doing that process even worse. They are providing the chuckling, laughing audience soundtrack for the audience. So you could actually, the Jon Stewart Daily Show should just broadcast canned laughter, you know, for an hour.
Right.
The infectiousness of laughter would spread, and so people would feel that they were still American because they're laughing. So they go into how in a 2007 poll, Mr. Stewart, the fake news anchor, came in at number four, tied with the, quote, real news anchors, Brian Williams and Tom Brokaw of NBC and Dan Rather of CBS and Ian and Anderson Cooper of CNN, as the most admired journalist.
Wow. Oh, my God. Whoever thought that would ever happen? Oh, my
right,
God.
Right, but who would ever have thought of that? But if you understand what I'm talking about, and I've understood what I'm talking about for decades, so I could predict that, you know, because, you know, I've never seen Jon Stewart's show, never looked at it, because I don't need to laugh. I'm already laughing enough myself, looking like a speed freak because of what I understand. And I'm saying that if you understand me and get to that point of perception, then you'll be laughing all day long, and you won't need any, you know, any support in that. You'll actually be worried about yourself because you're laughing too long, too much.
So you're saying that Jon Stewart has created like a vacuum for people to go to express their frustrations. And now he has got the respect of other journalists that have been in the real or supposedly real news business. He says that, so Stewart's basically saying he's in the fake news business.
That's right. But he's not in the fake or real news business. He's there to create the effect of bad news so you can survive. So
right.
Follow
yes.
this through. So here he is now, a respected journalist, and Newsweek said that his show is the coolest pit stop on television for presidential candidates, former presidents, world leaders, administration officials. They all want to be guests on his show. 7 or 8 years ago, they'd stayed away from the show. It hadn't established its role yet.
Right,
but
right.
You could have predicted in 2001, 2002, that Bush represented the Post-Information Society and had nothing to say. His role was different, had a different function. But the American need to process the TV landscape and have the bad news, good news syndrome continuing as an archetype was filled in by The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. They're the ones who are doing it. That's why, you know, he is considered equal to Brian Williams and Tom Brokaw, because Brokaw and Rather were on one level obsolesced by the chip body. They no longer could serve the function of giving bad news because everybody was already experiencing incredible bad news in so many ways because of the chip environment, which you just started to talk about at the beginning of the show as disrupting and chaotic all the time.
Right.
Oh, okay, so the sense of chaos and bad news was the role of NBC, CBS, and CNN. Because the chip body obsolesced that, then they had no role anymore. And so the monitoring of these guys, the daily syndrome of watching the evening news, faded out in this past 8-10 years. But we still needed the bad news, good news archetype, and that's done by Jon Stewart under the guise of offering fake news.
Oh, no. So do you think that he will be able to continue doing that?
Because somebody will continue. He will continue. Most shows never die. They go into reruns. And
right.
people have developed a fetish over the shows that were important at some point in their life, right? So no show ever dies.
This is about news, so it's not going to be relevant 2 years from now if somebody's watching reruns of The Daily Show about news that's totally been chewed up, eaten, and processed already.
Yes, well, what we're hoping is that we take over his show.
Oh. Okay, and now I see where you're going. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So it says here, it says The Daily Show, it's interesting, I'm quoting what the New York Times journalist is writing and showing how the writer has no idea what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
This acceptance by the New York Times and this praising of him as the most trusted man or raising him as a potentially the trusted man. The article itself, I'm reading as an anthropologist, it shows all the hidden assumptions in the culture in responding to a guy like Jon Stewart. So I'm going to quote things that tell us more than the journalist realizes. The journalist, who I think is a woman, says, "The Daily Show resonates not only because it is wickedly funny." Now, you got to have wickedly funny something happening to keep the American sense of humor feeling it's alive, right?
Exactly.
And it gets more desperate when there's less communication between people in the chip body landscape, so they can't exchange humor, at least verbally in their chemical body. So there needs to be a replacement of that in a public space of humor exchange happening, and that comes in the old TV landscape, which is the Jon Stewart thing, right?
Right, exactly.
So it resonates not only because it's wickedly funny, she should add, which all Americans are addicted to, right? But she doesn't. And she thinks it's great that it's funny, but also because its keen sense of the absurd is perfectly attuned to an era in which cognitive dissonance has become a national epidemic.
Boy, is she right there. That is exactly right. We're just numb. Right, yeah, that's right.
That's right. Now, she's correct, but they do not give the causes. If people listen to our show and believe what we're saying and wanted to believe it, then they realize that it's not a mystery when you bring in the chip body landscape and lay it over against the old chip, the TV body landscape. You're naturally going to get cognitive dissonance if you don't understand you're juggling more than one body.
Right.
That's what our press conference would be. We would be explaining, like we had made a huge scientific discovery, why things are happening. Because we've figured out the simple answer. We've got four bodies.
Right.
Right?
Exactly. Right. So does this, did the New York Times writer, do they have an email address or whatever?
Yes. There is a, what, you want to email her?
Well, yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, we'll tell her to listen to this show, right?
Exactly. Why not? Why not use the lexical environment to our advantage?
See, here it is. When you have the chip body landscape overlaid on the TV landscape and the astral body and the chemical body, you are naturally living in a surrealistic world because you're juxtaposing these different amazing landscapes, which are tiny bodies for yourself, and there's no way to communicate how to make a rational statement about that experience.
Mm-hmm.
So she's saying, Mr. Stewart's frequent exclamation when he's interviewing people, "Are you insane? Are you insane?" That is what everybody thinks, and it's what you think every day when you're walking around L.A. Most
right.
people looking at other people who are, you know, listening, talking on their cell phones, they look insane.
Yeah, they do.
All right. So Mr. Stewart's exclamation, "Are you insane?" is not particularly comedic genius. He's just reporting what everybody's thinking. And then she says, in this situation where the surreal and outrageous have become commonplace, an era kicked off by the wacko 2000 election standoff in Florida, rocked by the terrorist attacks of September 11th, and haunted by the fallout of a costly war waged on the premise of weapons of mass destruction that did not exist. Now, they talk about at the beginning, in 1999, when Mr. Stewart took over The Daily Show, it had a heavy show business agenda. It made fun of show business celebrities.
Right.
But he, under Jon Stewart, he decided to mock serious topics, you know, political issues.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he instinctively knew that he had to become the new Walter Cronkite, that in 2000, 2001, when, in the post-information society, he had to provide the serious bad news on the big scale, not bad news on the celebrities' lives and the ups and downs of their tragedies. but the big serious issues. So it says, following 9/11 and the invasion of Iraq, the show focused more closely not just on politics, but also on the machinery of policymaking and the White House's efforts to manage the news media. So there is, since 2000, only one news source or one reality source, and that's the White House. And the White House, resonating with the post-information society, had nothing to say, but that's what it was role. That was his role, to continue saying nothing to show that the post-information society.
Right.
So in the ecology of juggling these bodies and the public space, there was no public space in a post-information society, so he had a president who mimed that and had charisma because he expressed no public space. He had nothing, no interest in the media landscape and had nothing to say other than supposedly lying. And so to fill in the gap, you needed to have a public space created. And that was the role of John Stewart. So they had to attack the real non-public space, which was the real public space, because it was the chip body landscape represented by the White House, so that they could give people a sense there was a public space. And that public space was so... What'd you say?
Very bizarre, but very true.
Very bizarre, but true. It's true if you understand the causes, if you accept what I'm saying as the causes. So the role of John Stewart was to be the establishment. The establishment always provided a patina of everything's okay and we're a wonderful society and we're all in this together. We're a social organism. The White House could not do that anymore since 2000. So you had to have... And that was too upsetting. That was too, quote, terroristic, anarchistic, and hypocritical. Nobody understood why Bush had to be what he was. I mean, he was an excellent president for the conditions of juggling the four bodies. But the older TV landscape cannot perceive the chip body effect, so they became the establishment. And the epitome of the establishment was John Stewart keeping the sense of humor going by juxtaposing how reality did not match with what the White House apparently was saying. And all the contradictions of the weapons of mass destruction, all the issues that Bush was accused of, John Stewart had to point that out to people to make people think there was a public space.
Now I see what you're saying, right.
Right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so when we would come on and have our press conference, if we had a show every day, we would point out there is no public space. Nobody able to process what we're saying, but we would keep repeating like a Chinese water torture mantra why this was the case.
I see. Right, I understand now. So, and what would you think would happen if we did that press conference?
We would be would successful. We would take over. Because there is a lot of people right now fed up with this present decade, fed up with the non-communicating Android meme or White House and the overload of entertainment represented by John Stewart. Right. They are secretly fed up with it all. And that's why the economy is collapsing, because nobody will talk to anybody anymore. We're now reaching the post-information realization, okay? And so we come in at that point to be the last piece of information explaining how we became post-information, that would have great resonance. Okay?
So what do you think if you were to give, what I'd like you to do, is this is what I'm going to do with this particular archive of the show, is now that you've addressed that, I want to do, after we have the break, whatever your message is, let's presume that his producers are going to hear this, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this archive and I'm going to find out who is in charge over there as far as looking at new material and so forth, and then take your announcement and then send it over there and see what response occurs.
Right, and they will have to have me on the show to, quote, kill me, because to give coverage in their context is the role of the establishment. They are the new assassins.
Interesting. Alright, so alright everybody, here we go. we are attempting to connect with John Stewart, everybody, so we're going to take a quick break and we'll get back to that and more right after this. This is Cashflow on Achieve Radio with James Martinez and Bob Neverett. Stand by, everybody.
there's no bloody revolution.
This is James Martinez from the Cash Flow Show. I want to ask you one question and one question only. You're ready to change your life. Now, as you begin to think about that question, how many of you are swimming in credit card debt, tired of your credit cards controlling your life, behind on your payments, struggling to make ends meet, worried about your financial well-being? You're going to end that now. Enough is enough. This is hot. Are you ready to feel good? Now? That's right. Call our 800 number and listen to the 12-minute overview. It explains who we are and what we do to end your credit card debt. Leave your name and number after the message and do it today. Call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655. Freedom is a phone call away. Away. Away for you to feel good now. 888-213-7655. 888-213-7655.
There is something inside us that aches to change the world, that wants to make a difference. But sometimes we get stopped because we think, well, how can I make a difference? What can one person do? Well, imagine if everyone who felt that way got together. How powerful would that be? Well, that's exactly what Humanity Unites Brilliance does. It brings together people who feel the same way about global transformation and provides a central uniting place for everyone to get together to move towards creation of a world of self-sustainability and self-empowerment. Go to passionforhumanity.com and see what I'm talking about. Here's a chance to unite some of the most effective nonprofit and for-benefit organizations and at the same time give you access to resources from some of the world's most inspirational leaders. You'll meet people with similar visions as you. You'll have a support network designed to connect you and your passions with others. You'll transform while you help transform the world. PassionForHumanity.com. Explore and change the world.
Listening to AchieveRadio.com, the positive side of broadcasting.
Back, everybody. This is James Martinez with Cash Flow. Special guest today is Bob Neverett. It is September 3rd, 2008, and this second half of the show is going to be a direct address to the John Stewart of The Daily Show with my special guest here, Bob Neverett. So, Bob, go ahead, and if you were in the conference room with the producers of this show, you would say the following. What would that be?
If I was in John Stewart's place.
Yeah, conference room with his producers, they're prepping for the show, what would you say?
I would say that the illness of today is the desire and the need to process information. We all have to be, we don't have to learn English anymore or any particular language or any things that the kids are taught in schools. To be socially effective, even when you're a teenager, you must know what's going on. So when you meet in social gatherings, you are a citizen if you can acknowledge whatever the latest news story is
right.
And have a comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
So the pressure on us, John, is to process information. And that the endless pressure and the juggling of the four kinds of information that come from the chip body, the TV body, the astral body, and the chemical body. And so the establishment, the status quo, John, is represented by someone who is very good at processing information and making it good news via humor. So, John, I'm quoting from the article. It says, quoting Stephen Colbert, that John Stewart's ability to consume and process information is invaluable. He is a, John, you're a clear, Colbert is saying, John, you're such a clear thinker. You're able to take all these data points of spin and transparent falsehoods dished out in the form of political discourse and fish from that what is its true meaning. What are the red herrings, the false leads? In other words, John, you distinguish between the real and the unreal, and that is the establishment's job, is to pretend there is a real and that there is an unreal, or a truth and a lying. So his job, John's job, mm-hmm. So I'm talking to John, to his staff, I'll mention John. But when I occasionally look over and address John, I'll address him. So I'm going to oscillate back and forth here. So going back and reviewing some of the points in the article, John, it says, with your great talent for processing news, that you began, when you were hired to take over the show from this guy, Craig Kilborn, mm-hmm. that you were moving the show into tracking the big, super depressing, quote, super depressing issues, like the cherry picking of pre-war intelligence, the politicization of the Department of Justice, and the efforts of the Bush White House to augment its executive power. You were to criticize what became known as Bush's making policy based on the gut and instinct. And you, John, will then cover up the fact and the reason and the cause for why Bush had to operate that way. You had to put it back into a familiar form of cultural schizophrenia of what is real and what isn't. So they take on the big issues. And so I mentioned the morning cup of sadness, John. You begin the morning day. It says here in the article, you look for the stuff, the most somber stories that seem to speak truth to power in blunt, sometimes profane language, while using satire and playful looniness to ensure that the political analysis never becomes solemn or pretentious. See, you can't get serious. We, John, on our show, will become serious, and we will not relieve it with humor. But if you understand what we are saying about the four bodies, and you realize the quadraphenic situation we're in, double schizophrenic, then you would start laughing. We don't need to give jokes. We don't need to show contradictions between what John McCain said 2 years ago and what he said this week, or what some politician said 3 years ago and what they're saying now. That is normal for politicians to contradict themselves when you understand they're addressing four bodies, four different landscapes. So it says here that Mr. Stewart himself is quoted saying, in some respects, the heavier subjects, you know, the depressing ones, are the ones that are most loaded with opportunity because they have the most potential energy. And he qualifies that saying, you know the difference between potential and kinetic energy in science? He says, so to delve into that, which gives you the largest combustion, the most interest, is what we want to do. And he says, I don't do this for the audience. I do it for us. Everyone here is working hard, too hard, to do stuff we don't care about. Okay? And the reason they're keeping it light and don't care is that they're siphoning off their anxiety. You and your staff, John, that's what you're doing. And you are miming the anxiety everybody has. But we're going to continue needing the humor and the use of the TV environment if we keep using humor to process the actual causes. So, Mr. Stewart, you say this in the article. Those types of stories, this is what they look for, that can, almost like the guy in The Green Mile, which is the Stephen King story and film in which a character has the apparent ability to heal others by drawing out their ailments and pain. They want to do that. We want to suck in all the toxins and allow you to do something with it that is palatable. Palatable. Isn't that what the establishment does, James?
Yeah, exactly. I would say that's exactly what they do.
I mean, in the credit card business, I'm stepping out now. Where we've gone back. We've left John's studio. I'm speaking to you confidentially in the green room. That is the issue. John had to take a break. Now he's coming back in, so I'm leaving you, James, and going back in and addressing John and his staff. they play with in their arsenal of techniques, and they were helped by new technology 8 years ago that came in that allowed them to edit and make incredible juxtapositions and footage, the technology which was causing a lot of the confusion in people's lives, the chip landscape, is the very thing that you, John, ride on. The very technology that's causing the chaos. Bush is not causing the chaos. The environment, the technology is. So he says, and I'm not defending Bush here. Bush has not been able to explain this himself, all right?
And so, then probably never will.
Yes, because that's not the White House's job.
Exactly.
Anyways, to make what they do is they search for ways to frame the story using an arsenal of techniques ranging from wordplay to exercises in pure logic, for example, deconstructing the administration's talking points on the surge, to demented fantasy sequences where they imagine Vice President Dick Cheney sending an army of orcs to attack Iran when he assumed the presidency briefly last year during President Bush's colonoscopy.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes on with their technique. Now, it's the very collage of all this stuff that is making cognitive dissonance for the public. So they say they took one element. Well, John, you and your staff did. The cartoon strip The Decider, featuring Mr. Bush as a superhero who made decisions without fear of repercussion, consequence, or correctness, which is exactly what Bush had to do as president. He must keep the centralized image that there is a United States going and not wait for facts or details to do that. So they satirized the president's penchant for making gut calls that sidestepped the traditional policymaking process. The traditional policymaking process has now been taken over by you, John Stewart. You're the one who's laying down what we need to remember as Americans that are our values, which is the ability to distinguish between reality and lying. The problem is that that's irrelevant under ship body landscapes. All right. So it says, Then, Mr. Stewart, you complain that most of daily reality provides a situation where over-the-top parodies that they do come to fruition. So it's very difficult to distinguish entertainment from reality. Reality is always outdoing the observed scenarios they create in their entertainment context. He says, the absurdity of what you imagine to be the dark heart of conspiracy theorists' wet dreams far too frequently turn out to be true. Now, there's the crux of the matter.
That's really interesting that he'd say that. Yeah, that is the crux of the matter.
Because you and your staff, John, are the conspiracy in the sense that you cover up the reasons why you are successful and why you have to provide the new role of being the old White House, which was Walter Cronkite. The new White House is operating globally and on a solar level. So my colleague, Mr. Stewart, James Martinez, deals with the conspiracy of the credit card fraud every day. And it's not a fiction, it's a fact. But it's not a conspiracy in terms of what we consider as guilty parties fooling the layman. The conspiracy is what one does just by communicating. Our show is a conspiracy. We're keeping the information environment going, but at least we're admitting we're doing the conspiracy.
Right, exactly. Yeah. We're very upfront about that. Go on.
Yes, you are an assassin, Mrs. Stewart, and you won't admit it. You cover it up by having us laugh. And laughter is what the people need to think there is a public space. So then, Mr. Stewart, you say you're looking forward to the end of the Bush administration as a comedian, as a person, as a citizen, as a mammal. Even though you've mocked Mr. McCain and Mr. Obama for lapses from their high-minded promises of post-partisanship, you, Mr. Stewart, say you don't think the current skirmishes between McCain and Obama are being conducted on the scale that Bush conducted things, or even the Clintons. I don't think it has the same true viciousness and contempt. Now, see, there he's covering up the viciousness and contempt of the information environment and the chip landscape and the caveman reality in a post-information situation. Whoever is going to be president must continue what the role of the White House is as a centralized icon in the post-information environment. They've got to be vicious. That's a given. And the only reason we can accept the viciousness of the White House, which is a global phenomenon, is to have our local White House, your show, The Daily Show, provide us reminders of the American public space. That's a conspiracy if you don't admit that. Now, John, I don't think you understand what I'm saying, but it just requires listening to a few shows in the archives, and it's pretty obvious.
There you go. Feel free, John, to go into the archives. If you don't know what he's talking about regarding the five-body model, please do so. It will help you assimilate what he's talking about here, and you'll be glad that you did as well.
Right, and if you have me on your show, you respond to this, that will be a conspiracy in itself, because we want to have a press conference and set up our own media space, but you will quickly have me on your show to cancel us generating a space by including us in your space as content for that show, which goes on in all shows, Oprah Winfrey everywhere. That's the conspiracy. Have them on first.
At least we're being honest about it and straightforward.
That's right. And so the argument is, who is the host of this weird environment we live in where we're juggling the four bodies? Banking doesn't know who the host is and who the guest is anymore.
That's the problem. And for John Stewart, please check out Bob Never sequentially as you go into the archives, but also listen to detailed information what I say regarding that, because we've discussed the credit card industry and banking and information environment and transferring credits or ones and zeros through space and so forth and what that means.
Right. Now, we know that, as the article says, Mr. Stewart, your comedic gift, your high-frequency radar for hypocrisy, your talent for excavating narratives from mountains of information. It's not a talent. It's a need that people require. They need to have a cartoon outline of what's going on so they can sound reasonably sensible in their e-messages, the internet messaging, and in their meeting around the coffee container, right, at the office.
Right.
They must keep English going, but it must refer to what's happening. So they need narratives. That's why college kids really started watching The Daily Show, you know, at the beginning, because they need, and they're socializing at that point in the late teens, early 20s, where they got to appear cool, social, intelligent, or whatever, or hip, they need more desperately pattern recognition, which is what The Daily Show provides. So the journalist quotes one of the executive producers. It says, John has a talent to name things that don't seem to have a name. Now, remember, I'm now talking to James.
Yes.
Remember, we've discussed the Rumpelstiltskin situation. As long as Rumpelstiltskin has not been named properly and named accurately, he can continue to run his conspiracy of hijacking the village. Well, I'm accusing you, John, of naming things inadequately. You're naming the content, which is actually the process that people need. They need to have local names for being an American. But to name the big process on the level we're doing here on our cash flow show is the real targeting of Rumpelstiltskin. And so he, John Stewart, and his staff are the actual Rumpelstiltskin, because I'm naming what they're doing.
Exactly.
But remember, this is being written by a journalist who needs the idea of news and journalism in the New York Times to have validity, so must celebrate someone who's processing information, which is exactly what a journalist does.
I know, it's so crazy. Right.
And you can see the effect of this, at least in 2000, was that people thought the Bush image represented someone who was ignoring the media elite, which is the information processing. So you see, you cannot become, if you become successful like the Daily News is, and you, John, are now the most trusted man in America, that is not the real purpose of satire. Satire is to wake people up. Ironically, today, satire and entertainment cannot wake people up because it's so complex, you need to have something different, which is what we're doing, something totally on an almost incomprehensible level. But if you actually took the time, if you ever could get the time, it makes perfect sense what we're talking about. So he says, it says here in the article, Mr. Stewart, that you're not animated by partisanship, but by a deep mistrust of all ideology. You display an impatience with the platitudes of both the right and the left, and a disdain for commentators who use those terms or those categories. Now, that is a big cop-out, because it's very easy to make fun of the right and the left, because they represent a public space. When there was a public space, back in the 50s, 40s, and 30s, since there is no space for the right and the left, to make fun of something that's already a corpse is not relevant. But if you want to be a member of the establishment, to be the new local White House, you would attack politicians on the right and the left, because your job in the Daily Show is to create the idea that there's a public space, even though the public space now is just an archetypal mental condition of keeping the sense of humor going, the essence of Americanism, right?
Right. Now, John, make sure you go back and listen to this again and have all your colleagues sitting down with you and giving you their two cents about this, because I can already tell right now you're already, wait a minute. All right,
yes.
Go ahead. Continue, Bob.
Yes, because to be successful and become the new Walter Cronkite, you have to express the most average, dull, dim-witted sensibility, which is what Mr. Stewart is doing. He's described as the Jersey boy, you know, the New Jersey boy, an ardent Mets fan, presented as Mr. Common Sense. Now, the common sense is humor. That's the sensory mechanism that is the common American sense. But common sense, in the cliche meaning of it, means, oh, this is real. This is what's real. But if you're constantly, and so therefore, Mr. Stewart, if you're constantly exposing that the global White House is lying and ignoring the practical realities of life, that appears to the American as common sense. But it ain't the common sense when you're juggling four bodies. The common sense is what we're talking about, the awareness of what the dilemma is when you're juggling four landscapes. So he's Mr. Common Sense, pointing to the disconnect, and I'm saying this to the staff now.
Yes.
You work for a person who's pointing to the disconnect between reality and what politicians and news media describe as reality, channeling the audience's id, and articulating its bewilderment and indignation. We don't need to be bewildered and indignant if we take the time to understand what's going on, if we understand what climate we live in. So they quote in the article you, Mr. Stewart, saying that President Bush and his allies took only an hour to discuss the invasion in March 2003. And you say, John, it's the time it takes lens crafters to make a pair of bifocals to discuss a war that would destroy the global order. This war does not destroy the global order. The global order was destroyed by Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and IBM 30 years ago.
Exactly.
With the chip landscape.
Uh-huh.
Actually, the reason there was no ability for the protests against the Iraq invasion to get any momentum is it actually provided a sense of order within the American archetypal terms and for the idea that we're in a military-industrial society and we need to assert our reality, our archetype, against all the other competing archetypes in the TV landscape. And so the effort to produce global order through the Iraq war was a success, but of course it's a puny operation compared to the chaos caused by the latest products coming out of Apple.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or out of the world that Marty Kaiser describes. The
That's
endless
right.
need for surveillance and new technology for surveillance and counter-surveillance. That is the destruction of any social order. But people now today don't need a sense of global order, but they do need their TV body to be activated and reinforced by someone who presents humor and the old argument about what's real and what isn't. So they say in the article, unlike many comics today, you, Mr. Stewart, do not trade in trendy hipsterism or high decibel narcissism. You possess Johnny Carson's talent for listening and George Carlin's gift for observation. Your comedy remains rooted in what Tom Wolfe called, quote, the irresistibly lurid carnival of American life. Now, there's Tom Wolfe, you know, a good friend of Marshall McLuhan, familiar with the TV landscape, approximating what McLuhan saw as the natural carnival 24/7 under TV conditions in the 50s and 60s. And then further, Tom Wolfe says, America is these weird happenings in this wild, bizarre, unpredictable, hog-stomping, baroque country. Now, the chip landscape canceled that world, that lurid carnival of American life, presented it on a global scale, and no one even remembers what America was. So that you reinforced, Mr. Stewart, the idea there is an America by your show. And then it goes in the article, quoting Mr. Colbert. He says, "We often discuss satire, the sort of thing John does, and to a certain extent I do. We discuss satire as a distillery." Colbert says, you have an enormous amount of material, and you still have to distill it to a syrup by the end of the day. So much of it is a hewing process, chipping away at things that aren't the point or aren't the story or aren't the intention. Really, it's the last couple of drops you're distilling that makes all the difference. It isn't that hard to get a ton of corn into a gallon of sour mash, but to get that gallon of sour mash down to that one shot of pure whiskey takes patience as well as discipline and focus. In other words, it's a homeopathic process that you, John, and your staff have to do. You must create the fantasy that this reality is knowable. That's the fantasy that the present White House, called the Daily Show, is creating. Just like they said Eisenhower did 50 years ago. Create a fantasy of America.
Okay, we got about 3 minutes left. I just want to probably address the Daily Show by saying, if you've gotten this far, I'll be real surprised, because most of you in the Office of Barbie probably couldn't get enough linear straight time to listen to this thing through and through, because your cell phone went off, your pager went off, your assistant called you, you faxed something, the phone rang, some electrical interruption probably happened. But the good news is you can rewind and you can listen to this over and over and over again. So you probably got about 2.5 minutes, Bob. So if you want to sum up what you would want to address to the Daily Show, John Stewart, go for it now.
So the average citizen today has to process the excrement of the information society. You know, we call everything the age of BS. We're in the age of the BS.
Right.
That is because this information that we have to swim around in and have to have it distilled and presented to us properly so that we remind ourselves that we did have a body, a chemical American body, that is your job. And so Mr. Colbert says, and see how this enema, the Daily Show is a daily enema that citizens need. Now, we understand that you will have to continue doing this, John, because just as people won't like to think America's disappeared and that actual physical entity has disappeared, the afterimage of America must be continually generated. So you have a very important job as the president of the American White House, Mr. Stewart, to keep this image going until we have our press conference. And so what you're doing is how Mr. Colbert sums up your talents, Mr. Stewart. He says, "John's ability to consume and process information is invaluable. Mr. Stewart is such a clear thinker that he's able to take all these data points of spin and transparent falsehoods dished out in the form of political discourse and fish from that what is the true meaning, what are the red herrings and false leads, even as he performs the ambidextrous feat of making jokes about it at the same time. So I conclude saying, John, you should be ashamed that that's what you do if you want to be a real comedian."
Absolutely. So, without further ado, I want to just remind everybody, we got about a minute left. Thanks, Bob. We've got Marty Kaiser on tomorrow. I'm going to be addressing a little bit deeper some of the stuff that I could not speak with him last time in the brief time that I had. So, check out that tomorrow, my interview with Marty Kaiser. Again, thank you very much, Bob, for coming on here. Also, for those of you that are in the staff at the Daily Show, we hope you got this far. We hope we understand what we're talking about, and we look forward to communicating with you in the future here. So thank you very much. Also, again, everybody, if you've got any credit card problems and that's a gigantic issue for you and you can't deal with it, go ahead, dial 888-213-7655, or please give me a call or email me at getdebtreliefnow@gmail.com. Thank you very much, Bob, for coming on.
Thanks, James, and more on this next week.
All right. Take care, everybody. All right. Cash flow again tomorrow, everybody. Take care.
Hey everybody, this is James Martinez from the Cash Flow Show. I want to ask you one question and one question only. You're ready to change your life. Now, as you begin to think about that question, how many of you are swimming in credit card debt, tired of your credit cards controlling your life, behind on your payments, struggling to make ends meet, worried about your financial well-being? You're going to end that now. Enough is enough. This is hot. Are you ready to feel good? Now? That's right. Call our 800 number and listen to the 12-minute overview. It explains who we are and what we do to end your credit card debt. Leave your name and number after the message and do it today. Call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655. Freedom is a phone call away. Away. Away for you to feel good now. 888-213-7655. 888-213-7655.
You're listening to AchieveRadio.com, a new drummer for a new awakening.